Hello, everyone. I'm John Melke, and this is Parkside Today. You know, I've got great news for everybody. Following this program, we will all be smarter. And that's because we have the pleasure of talking with Bob Bennett, principal and founder of B Squared Civic Solutions. Bob provides guidance and support to the public and private sectors on many strategic areas, but especially on how cities are and are adapting to smart city technology and strategy. Prior to founding B Squared, Bob served as Chief Innovation Officer for Kansas City. And Bob, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
When do you remember, like, first hearing the term or cities considering the concept of being smart cities?
The first time I heard the term was probably late 2015. I was still in the Army at the time, and I was serving at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, where I was a instructor in strategy for the Army. Mm-hmm. And I was applying for the opportunity to become the Chief Innovation Officer for the city of Kansas City. Okay. And that's when I sort of learned a bit about what many communities were doing in terms of using data more efficiently or just using technology to augment their communities and to provide 21st century citizens that 21st century infrastructure, digitally speaking, that they become accustomed to.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting thing too, where, you know, if you go back not really that far, and if someone said, "Well, I'm the Chief Innovation Officer of just about anywhere," someone might say, "Well, what does the Chief Innovation Officer do? what position is that?" So,
Thomas Edison that a few years ago, he probably would have come up with about 1,412 ideas, and Sir Murgatroyd, Racine certainly had their share of innovators over the years.
Right. So that's kind of the thing about the smart cities, right? That it's really not something new, and you've used the example, and I hope you share a couple of those of. You know, you could go back to the stoplight and say, "Well, that was a smart city because you were using a new technology in a way to administer the city or a way to control the city and providing a better experience for residents."
I mean, I'd even go back farther to about 312 BC when the Romans created the first of the aqueducts. And as a result of that, people stopped dying of dysentery at alarming rates. And you actually could now count upon the wisdom of people who were older than 25.
Right.
And the result of that was, you know, essentially the concepts by which Western civilization was founded upon. So that was a pretty smart thing. And certainly it was further back than the beginning of the digital age. Right. Similarly speaking, Honolulu, Hawaii was the first city to actually have electricity in their public buildings. When King Kamehameha III installed electricity at the Iolani Palace in 1886, which was a solid 8 years before lights were turned on at the White House.
Wow.
So, you know, any community that uses the same tools that the folks within that society are using, be that digital, be that electricity, be that water, that's a smart city. I don't think anybody lives in a dumb city. Mm-hmm. I think, quite frankly, most cities are pretty smart. Mm-hmm. It's just when you compare one to the other, which cities are being responsive the most to their citizens' requirements.
Right. What in your role as Chief Innovation Officer for Kansas City, what are some key examples of how Kansas City has used and continues to use smart city technology?
I think the most visible manifestation of what we did was the kiosks. Mm. We placed about 25, essentially they're 6-foot-tall iPhones in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. And we used them as a means of communication, primarily for public safety requirements. So if a tornado warning was issued or a thunderstorm warning was issued or there was some other requirement for us to engage citizens, in addition to using the digital apps that some folks have accepted as a part of their subscription for being in the community, we could also put it on a screen that everyone can see just while walking down the street.
Sure.
We then sort of use that as a secondary function to allow advertisers to pay for some of the time on that screen. Mm-hmm. And the result of that was we now had more funding to buy technology and to do things for the community. We also had a public-facing element of our smart city, which was the public Wi-Fi along our Main Street corridor, so that when you were connected physically throughout the 2.5-mile run that the streetcar has, that you were also connected digitally. And all of the access that one needs to participate in life as we know it today is available to you along that streetcar line. I think probably the biggest change that we had, though, was not necessarily visible to citizens. And that was where we started leveraging all the data that we were collecting in terms of knowing how many people were located at different locations throughout the city, where they moved around, how the movement of those people correlated with water usage. Mm-hmm. It allowed us to make more data-informed decisions based upon where the requirement for city services was. And certainly this was done anonymously. We only aggregated and used data at about the block level, so I can't tell you who did what to whom with the data that the city had access to.
Yeah.
What I could do was essentially prioritize how the city provided water pressure, because we now know where people were located. We were able to figure out better ways for the city to maneuver public safety assets like regular police patrols. We were able to spot anomalies where people were gathering with some of the sensors that we had. Mm-hmm. We were able to optimize traffic flow so that you could spend less time looking for a parking spot and less time sitting in traffic and more time shopping or spending time with your family. Mm-hmm. We were able to use sensors to understand how to better price parking, and then, use technology to allow folks to pay for parking, making their lives easier.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking with Bob Bennett, principal and founder of B Squared Civic Solutions. And prior to B Squared, Bob was chief innovation officer for Kansas City. Bob, was it the embracing smart city technology, doing some of the things that you talked about, how the city is gathering and that not only gathering the information, but then making decisions based on that information or on that data. Was that a tough sell for city administrators?
When you focus the conversation around how to help a city manager make a better decision, it was one of the easier sells I've ever had to make in my life. When you get right down to it, City Hall is a factory, like any other factory. Mm-hmm. But the product that comes out of it is good policy and public services. And the thing that allows you to do that is better decision making. It's the same as using data analytics to better build a baseball team. It's the same as using data analytics to figure out ways to distribute goods and services the way that Amazon or some of these grocery store chains are doing. Mm-hmm. For getting folks their services. Mm-hmm. So, no, it was not a hard sell at all. Mm-hmm. Getting some of the city offices to redirect budget in order to purchase that technology that were not in the business of making decisions, that was a harder sell.
Okay.
And quite frankly, that is probably still the remaining stumbling block for most communities. Mm-hmm. Is not the senior leadership of a community. Frequently, it's the middle managers or the folks who have responsibilities for maintaining infrastructure and aren't necessarily inclined to improve that infrastructure. They're simply interested in maintaining it.
Okay. You know, the last month when when Racine held 2 days of smart city, I'll call it a forum or a summit, and Mayor Corey Mason led off the event with the statement talking to people about the fact that the city of Racine was, you know, excited to be noted as a smart city, and there's some funding and expertise that goes along with advancing that, and then his punchline was, and then people would say, well, what the heck is a smart city? And you know, the time that we've had to talk about it, it certainly has our conversations have made it much easier for me to answer that question if I'm, you know, talking with someone, a friend, an acquaintance, a colleague, and if the question comes up, what's a smart city? It's far beyond the just like, oh, you're going to be able to connect to Wi-Fi on your phone, and the importance of what it means for the city to be able to operate more effectively.
Yeah, I mean, it is a citizen-centric movement. And I think that when you use the technology, that's interesting. But when you focus upon improving the lives of citizens of Racine, mm-hmm. and when you focus upon providing services in a manner that they expect, that's smart. And I think that's where the crux of the matter comes down to.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, talk a little bit about in your new role as principal and founder of B Squared, what sort of clients or who is it that's looking for some of the strategic guidance that you provide?
I guess I have three families of clients with whom I work. The first of these is actually an international. I used to say the word think tank, having had recent conversations with some of our associates, I'm going to refer to it as a think and act tank, and that's called the Cities Today Institute. They're based out of London, and they are a collaborative of about 170 different communities, and we do everything from hosting different seminars and workshops and gatherings for city leaders at a density of about 20 cities per group, and just focus upon what are the best-in-breed practices in smart city technology. How are other communities employing these things, and how is community X paying for it, which frequently is actually the biggest question that a lot of these cities face. Yeah. And then we combine those groups of 20 with about 4 to 5 different public sector or private sector vendors, so they can understand what's happening in the R&D sectors that are out in the world. Mm-hmm. The second family of my clients are a few companies, not that many, but a few of them, and they generally bring me on board for short periods of time to better understand what cities want and need so that they can develop products that actually appeal to city leaders and solve problems that they may not necessarily have. A lot of cities with whom they work, so they don't have enough of a sample size to do that effectively.
Okay.
And then the third group, and certainly the largest group of clients I've got, are cities themselves. And much like I did for Mayor James, in terms of sitting down with senior staff, figuring out ways to help mayors and city managers operationalize what they want to achieve with better application technologies, I now do that for other mayors, and I do it for other chief innovation or chief technology officers. And I'm pleased that one of my cities with whom I get to work is, in fact, Racine, and I get to work with Will Martin and Mayor Mason right there on the shores of Lake Michigan.
Yeah, yeah, which was extremely rough yesterday, the shores of Lake Michigan. I know we're going to be airing this a few weeks away from when it was that, but it was when you have Channel 4 parked along the lakefront doing their weather from there, you know you've got something fairly significant going on when the TV stations go out to watch the waves go by. We're talking with Bob Bennett, principal and founder of B Squared. Bob, when you shared the three families of clients that you're working with, what are there, when you say the largest group of those being the cities themselves, are there particular areas or questions that, you know, if a city called you up, you could almost go, yep, I'll be happy to talk to you, and I can probably tell you what questions you're going to ask me before you ask them.
There are generally some questions or some themes of that type, but it is more informative, quite frankly, from my perspective, to pick up a mayor's State of the City address. Because I'll very quickly be able to ascertain through that document where the city is really focused. Uh-huh. And when a mayor or a manager calls me up and says, oh, I want to make myself smarter, my initial reaction is generally, oh, my God, they're going to start talking about like shiny objects like sensors or data systems or something like that.
Right.
When you get right down to it, though, it ain't about the tech. The most critical document for any community, and there's two of them, is that State of the City address, where you kind of get the passion or the ethos, what's really the priority, both from the citizen perspective and from what the administration wants to do to meet those citizen needs.
Mm-hmm.
And the second document is your city budget.
Yeah.
And the first exercise I frequently undertake with any new city with whom I work is I go to a conference table and I lay out the it looks like an English assignment. I break down the State of the City address almost like a sentence diagram. And then I color code if it's a smaller community where I can do it on a big piece of paper with Sharpie markers, where I can circle a phrase in the State of the City address and tie it to where that funding is allocated. Mm-hmm. For larger communities, sometimes I need to use a wall and a very, very, very large whiteboard. But at the end of the day, you could still do that exercise and mm-hmm. figure out if, in fact, you are allocating your funding where the citizen needs are.
Right, right. As you work with these various clients, and be they cities or the private sector, what are some of the things that you see based on what you did in Kansas City, what's still going on there? What are some of the things that you see coming on the horizon, the kind of the next generation of smart city technology? Do you get a chance to think about that or see what that might be?
I think the first thing you're going to see is a request or a demand from citizens to gain access to that data that the cities are using.
Okay.
Certainly we live in a society that values transparency,
mm-hmm.
And I think you're going to see an increasing demand for making this decision engine that the city uses much more available to mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it could become a bit of a challenge as well, because the specific algorithms that go into that may be the property of a private sector contractor who's working for the city.
Hmm.
But the inputs and the outputs may be the types of things that cities can share, because it demonstrates that transparency, and it demonstrates what the city's trying to do.
Hmm.
I also think that you're going to see a greater emphasis on fusion, probably the fusion of different city departments in their activities, like the water department and the public works department, conducting their maintenance operations simultaneously. So you only break up the street once every 3 to 4 years, as opposed to doing it on different schedules and thereby irritating residents all the more.
Yeah.
So I think there's probably two things that are going to happen.
Wow. And and I know, kind of going back again to our conversations about, what you guys did in Kansas City with saying you're starting to look at or took a look at, like, where do we see, based on the age of let's say a water utility, a water line that has an expected life expectancy of, call it 70 years, where are those lines that are 70 years old? And how can you then plan your maybe street maintenance around something where you know you're going to need to go in and get that taken care of? Because if you don't, then you're going to be proactive rather than reacting to things, correct?
Certainly. And I think that's also a place where cities can harvest budget to employ technologies more effectively. Mm-hmm. And the simple fact is you are going to do the water maintenance, because as fun as doing smart city applications is, cities are required to make sure that when a resident turns on a tap, that there is potable, safe, life-sustaining water that comes out of it. But if you combine the budget for doing the maintenance on those water systems with the budget for doing the street maintenance systems in terms of the breaking up and replacing the road, now all of a sudden, you've dug once, you've saved about probably, or in Kansas City, it was something on the order of $800 every time we rolled a truck. So you've saved $800 right there.
Yeah.
Now I can use that $800 to install fiber or to install sensors or to make my system better instead of building grandpa's water system.
Mm-hmm.
Love my grandfather. His water system, not so much.
Yeah. Earlier in the conversation, and when you get throughout 2015 as maybe the first time that you'd heard the smart city concept or thought about that. So prior to that, you're not planning to be this person who's heavily involved in smart city technology and planning. Yet that's where you are today. How did you get there? I guess the point of my question is thinking about like graduates coming out of university, like here at UW Parkside or wherever, and thinking 20 years from now they're going to be doing something that nobody even knows what that is right now. And how did you feel that you were prepared to be able to adjust, adapt to a new opportunity?
I graduated college actually as a military history major, so zero applied usage anywhere pretty much on the planet. But it gave me a chance to have a 25-year Army career that I very much enjoyed. Probably the last third of that career, I was a strategic planner. And among the duties that I had were making sure that Department of Defense strategies were integrated with what the Department of State was doing or what the U.S. Agency for International Development was doing or what the nascent governments or the established governments of our allies were doing in different places where I was operating.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of stakeholders, diametrically opposed in some cases, endpoints with how they saw a policy developing, and in many cases, competitors one day and collaborators on a different day.
Yeah.
And once I got the opportunity to work with Mayor James, I understood that city departments were frequently exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the mindset of being able to establish a collaborative environment, to break down a situation where you can see where shared values, despite the public outcries, are sometimes greater than those areas where we have competing ideas, and then being able to mutually support each other in the pursuit of those shared goals was sort of the skill set that I picked up in the Army that applied one-to-one inside city government, and certainly it applies now, where I'm advising mayors on how to work with industry. A lot of the rhetoric you hear now is how, you know, different political candidates will talk about how industry is the enemy and they're out to get the American people. Well, that's not true. If the American people aren't succeeding, they're not going to buy any products. So there is middle ground there, and being able to articulate what that middle ground is, to show folks how to make the best use of that middle ground for everyone's betterment, and to define the win-win, that was something I learned through experience, not through necessarily the facts I learned, but the requirement on how to get through school and get through life was where you learned that bit.
Yeah. So, and not being, certainly you weren't opposed to, afraid of learning something new or venturing out into something that's a little bit different.
Oh, good heavens, no. It's so much fun to get out there and do something no one's ever done before. Yeah. Plus, no one's going to tell you exactly how to do it. I get enough micromanagement at home with my teenagers telling me how my life is all screwed up.
You know, a couple times you've mentioned Mayor James, and just for those people who may not know, we're talking about Mayor Sly James in Kansas City. And when he's elected mayor, what do you think about him made him, you know, willing to take a look at smart city technology or interested in taking a look at it? Or was it there already when he's elected?
I think the first opportunity that caught his attention was when Google Fiber was looking for a community to test their technology and fiber to the home. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for a city where they could host this great experiment. And Kansas City was in the final running for it. And he, along with Mayor Joe Reardon, who was in Kansas City, Kansas, mayor on the other side of the state line from us, mm-hmm. Banded together to attract Google to the community and were successful in that endeavor. And I think probably the mindset that he brought to that table was he wasn't afraid to open the doors of City Hall to people who had a different perspective, who had a different idea, and were willing to invest in a technology that certainly for Google was going to drive profit, but at the same time was going to drive a public good. And again, that opportunity to do good and do well at the same time appealed to him, and that was why he pursued it.
And, you know, it kind of see a little bit of a parallel possibly, and I may be giving too much credit to one corporation, but when the Smart Cities Council chose the city of Racine as one of five winners of the Smart Cities Readiness Challenge, I gotta believe that the Foxconn connection and what that is, you know, potentially could mean to the city of Racine, that certainly had had some impact, you would think, just because there's a company or an organization that's out there on the edge of technology, and they're right there in Racine, and maybe somebody looks at Racine a little differently because of that connection, you think?
The Foxconn connection certainly is a factor, but it is one of, I think, probably four or five factors that all have to be present. One of those factors is a mayor who's willing to engage with a Foxconn, mm-hmm. And look at them not as simply a tenant of a piece of property, which in his case is in Mount Pleasant. I mean, it's not even in Racine.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But using the power of, you know, the convening that a mayor and the keynote mayor of a region has to open the door and to say, yes, you are a tenant, but what else does that mean? You're bringing employees to our community. How do we help bring them in, not as temporary residents who do a gig for a couple of years and disappear, but as, you know, someone who's going to come here, raise a family here, make a commitment to being here, and, you know, when you cut them in 10 years, that they'll be, you know, bleeding UW red and screaming at Bucky Badger to do all the right things and really become a true Wisconsinite instead of wherever it was, where they were before they came to work at Foxconn.
Yeah.
Another factor of that is that it's not just the one corporation that is growing. That certainly may be the catalyst, but all of the other things that have to happen and all the growth that has to take place concurrently with that corporation and being able to bring those partners to the table and to build that ecosystem, I think, is the other factor that the council is reacting to. And then the final factor I think the council was reacting to in selecting Racine was simply the willingness of the city to take a risk and to put themselves out there and to not do business as usual, but instead look at the city in a different light.
Yeah.
And I think those are the big three things that led the council to their decision.
Yeah, interesting. We've got just a couple minutes left, and maybe this is one of those questions where where you can't answer it in a couple minutes. But we hear the term smart city, and you don't hear the term smart state. And I'm just curious as to, is this something, you know, when do states at some point or larger regions, do you think, Bob, get involved in this, or does it stay at more of the city level because of the population density, or how a city may be different than what a state is looking at?
At some level, I think states will eventually get to a more data-centric, more standardized, for lack of a better term, set of operations. Hmm. But I don't know they'll necessarily call it smart state because, you know, there's only 50 markets there.
Yeah.
53 if you include all the Commonwealth and territories. Largely, the smart city movement is a marketing term because, as we were talking about earlier, there's no such thing as a dumb city.
Yeah.
So let's embrace the fact that all cities do something that's smart for their citizens,
mm-hmm.
Or the legislators of that city get sent someplace else.
Mm.
We do the same thing at the state and federal level. We just don't refer to it as smart cities.
Yeah, interesting. We've been talking with Bob Bennett, principal and founder of B Squared Civic Solutions. Prior to that, chief innovation officer for Kansas City. Bob, thank you very much for giving us your time today. I know we'll certainly here in Southeast Wisconsin be watching to see how smart city technology is embraced here in the area. And again, thank you for taking time today. To hear past editions of Parkside Today, please visit uwp.edu/parksidetoday. Thanks, everyone, for listening.